It's time for the Earth First Update. We're going to bring you all the environmental news you can use. And let's start with announcements here in Santa Cruz coming up this Saturday, October 19th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is going to be doing a restoration at Natural Bridges State Park. Linda writes, I trust everyone had a pleasant summer. Early fall has arrived, and it's time to gear up for restoration work with our focus on the beach parks. In late November, early December, we will return to Quail Hollow Ranch County Park to continue our work on French broom removal, and that's going to last through most of the spring. But this Saturday, we come back to a location we have worked on for many years, concentrating mainly on the invasive non-native ice plant covering the dunes. She looks forward to seeing all of you there. How do you get to Natural Bridges? Well, go west on Highway 1. That's Mission Street through Santa Cruz. Continue to Swift Street, which is at the edge of town. Turn left on Swift and go down to the end. Make a right on Westcliff Drive, and Natural Bridges State Park is at the end of Westcliff Drive. Park your car on the street parallel to the entrance to the park and walk in. You will meet you in the sand parking lot on your left just as you pass the fee kiosk. And do remember, the Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They'll show you what to do. It's not too hard. You're pulling up ice plant. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. They ask that you wear comfortable layered clothing, probably so you can take it off. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It's probably going to shine if the weather forecasts hold out here, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided, but do bring your gloves and some water to drink. If you want further information, contact the Habitat Restoration Team Program Leader, Linda. Her number is 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. You can contact her by email at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net, or visit their webpage, www.cruzcnps.org. That's www.cruzcnps.org. And once again, that habitat restoration is this Saturday, October 19th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Natural Bridges State Park. Coming up October 27th through November 3rd is the Marcellus Shale Earth First Action Camp. That's going to be taking place in northeastern Pennsylvania. It's a week of workshops, trainings, camping, hiking, a mass forest mobilization on November 1st at the beautiful Waters of Rock Run. Please come out in force and stop Anadarko Petroleum in their tracks. Houston-based Anadarko Petroleum Corporation's proposed development would usher in 26 new gas pads, miles of pipelines, access roads, and other associated infrastructure to the wild and highly revered Loyal Sock area. It is home to the threatened yellow-bellied flycatcher, whose trees' homes will be destroyed, the threatened timber rattlesnake, whose dens would be cracked open and paved over, and, of course, black bears, whose habitat will be fragmented, driving them from the wild area they once called home. Workshops at the action camp will include biocentrism, anti-oppression, tree climbing, plant identification, backwoods skills, fire starting competitions, pods, backwoods games, cultural sensitivity for the region, know your rights, blockades and direct action training, map and compass training, stealth training, action photography and videography, and campaign messaging. If you'd like to attend the camp, they ask that you RSVP to MarcellusEarthFirst@riseup.net. Let me spell that for you. MarcellusEarthFirst@riseup.net. MarcellusEarthFirst@riseup.net. If you want more information about the action camp, go to Marcellus Earth First, and that's all spelled out, marcellusearthfirst.org. And once again, that taking place October 27th through November 3rd. And today, this morning in eastern Canada, mass arrests and cars on fire at a New Brunswick blockade. A tense standoff took place Thursday morning between 200 Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Mi'kmaq blockaders, and about 200 supporters. The chief and the tribal council personally blockaded gas company trucks behind the barricades. Protesters hurled rocks and a corporate news tripod at the RCMP. The RCMP responded by making mass arrests, but in the meantime, five RCMP vehicles were set ablaze. Reports say that less than lethal rounds and tear gas were fired at supporters, and pepper spray was deployed against supporters attempting to get through police lines. The Mi'kmaq car blockading Highway 132 near Rexton, New Brunswick, to halt the activity in a compound belonging to a gas company, SWN Resources Canada. SWN Resources Canada has been illegally trying to frack the land of the Epsipetok for months, and the tribe has been joined by other tribes of the Mi'kmaq and Wabanaki Confederacy peoples in attempts to take direct action against the gas company. Chief Aaron Sock of the Epsipetok was later released by the RCMP after being arrested while blockading the compound of Texas-based SWN Resources. However, over 40 Mi'kmaq warriors remain in custody. Native protesters against shale gas fracking in Rexton, New Brunswick, have mostly disappeared at the end of the day after clashes with RCMP officers who moved to enforce an injunction against the blockade, prompting a violent reaction in which five RCMP vehicles were burned and 40 people arrested. The majority of police at the scene left around 7 p.m. to cheers from a crowd of protesters. By about 10 p.m. this evening, there was just one RCMP vehicle at the scene, and a few protesters lingered at the site. John Levy, a First Nations chief on the scene, had earlier spoken to the RCMP officers, trying to reach an agreement on ending the standoff. It is not known what was said, but at the end of the conversation, some 40 officers who were wearing shields and helmets left, but about a dozen remained. Levy later said that First Nations may have lost the battle, referring to the fact that SWN Resources, the company at the center of the conflict, has not agreed to stop shale gas seismic testing as the protesters have demanded. But, quote, "we have not lost the war," he added. On September 30th, protesters cut down five trees beside the highway and used them to establish barricades on the road and to block the entrance to an area where the SWN Resources vehicles are parked. They say blocking the road was a last resort. "We've tried to speak to politicians, we've petitioned, we've marched on the legislature, we've done everything we should be doing, and Alward and his government just keep saying they have a mandate. I don't know who he got it from. It sure wasn't from the people of New Brunswick," said protester Al McLaughlin. Some of the protesters, who are referring to themselves as warrior chiefs and generals from First Nations communities across the Maritimes and Quebec, met with an RCMP mediator 2 weeks ago to relay their message. "This is done. We want them to stop," said James Pictou. "We want SWN Resources out of here, out of New Brunswick. We're not giving in anymore," he said. Fellow protester Ginny Marshall agrees. "This is a firm stand that there's no negotiating our water and our future and our children's future," she said. Protesters have agreed to allow emergency vehicles to pass through the barricades, and they say they will be peaceful. Of course, that all ended this morning. Tensions have flared over the possible development of a shale gas industry in New Brunswick, and in particular the use of hydraulic fracturing, which is also known as hydrofracking or just plain fracking. And we'll keep you up to date on that blockade, which continues, by the way, after the arrests. And we switch now to news from the Center for Biological Diversity. They write there will be a speed limit for ships to help prevent deaths of right whales. Ocean roadkill doesn't get much press, but massive commercial ships plowing at high speed through ocean waters take plenty of victims every year. The bodies of big whales are often spotted floating in cargo ships' wakes or found stuck to their prows. It's a good thing, then, that the federal government has proposed to keep new speed limits in place along the U.S. eastern coast instead of letting them expire this December to protect critically endangered North Atlantic right whales. The decision is partly in response to a 2012 petition by the Center for Biological Diversity and our allies. Fewer than 500 right whales are left in the world, and ship strikes are one of the top threats to North Atlantic right whale survival. The good news is an April 2013 scientific report found the speed limits have successfully reduced the number of vessel-related right whale deaths by 80 to 90%. In addition to protecting right whales, the National Marine Fisheries Service's speed limits will reduce collisions with other protected whales, including humpbacks, fin and minke whales, and slower ships produce less noise and air pollution, including greenhouse gas emissions. And here's a call to protect lesser prairie chicken habitat from destruction. Lesser prairie chickens, a rare grouse species with a unique and spectacular breeding dance, urgently need your help. Because of threats from oil and gas development, agriculture and grazing, wildfires, climate change, and drought, these birds are rapidly losing their homes across Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. The lesser prairie chickens have been on a waiting list for Endangered Species Act protection since 1999. That's 14 years, and were finally proposed for protection last fall. But in what seems like a purely political move, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is now pushing a special rule for lesser prairie chickens that will allow many habitat-destroying activities to continue. And the service may even allow the bird to be hunted. Take action now. Contact the National Fish and Wildlife Service and let them know that lesser prairie chickens are a rare and important species that should be protected as endangered. We can't allow the agency to allow habitat destruction or hunting of a listed species. And the Environmental Protection Agency has taken a historic step against ocean acidification. One small petition by the Center for Biological Diversity, one giant leap towards addressing an unprecedented crisis for our nation's and planet's seas, ocean acidification. The EPA has announced that in response to the petition, it's beginning an in-depth study on combating ocean acidification and reducing the pollution that's causing it. In fact, within the next 6 months, the EPA will convene a panel of scientists and policymakers to discuss the petition, which asks the agency to publish water quality guidance to help coastal states determine if their waters are impaired by acidification. This is the first time the Environmental Protection Agency has launched a formal work group to identify national water quality standards that can be used to determine ocean acidification's effects on marine life. And these effects are dire. When our oceans absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and they're doing that to the tune of 22 million with an M tons a day, that's a lot of carbon dioxide, water becomes acidic and can impair sea creatures' abilities to build protective shells. Already, ocean acidification has caused massive oyster die-offs in the Pacific Northwest, has caused sluggish coral growth in the Great Barrier Reef off Australia, and plankton are growing weaker shells in high latitudes. Center for Biological Diversity means to fight for ocean species, and the Environmental Protection Agency's announcement is promising news that it will help. And the Center for Biological Diversity and Defenders of Wildlife have gone to court to fight an Obama administration's decision to cancel the proposal to protect the Dunes sagebrush lizard under the Endangered Species Act. The lizard has been a candidate for federal protection for nearly 30 years until 2010, when the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in response to a petition by the Center for Biological Diversity, proposed to list it as endangered. 18 months later, however, the agency withdrew its proposal, saying it would instead rely on a volunteer conservation program in Texas, which unfortunately happens to be administered by the very oil and gas executives who would benefit from destroying the lizard's habitat. Sort of like the fox watching the hen house. And to make matters worse, the details of the agreement, like exactly how the lizards will be protected, were hidden from the public and even the Federal Wildlife Agency. How can our government do its work when it doesn't know what it's doing? Well, we don't know either. Dunes sagebrush lizards, which live only in Texas and New Mexico, are some of the nation's most imperiled lizards. They deserve better than this. And the court has upheld a ban on importing dead polar bears into the U.S. A Washington, D.C. Court of Appeals has upheld a decision to ban imports of polar bears shot and killed in Canada. The ban was triggered after the Center for Biological Diversity and Allies secured Endangered Species Act protection for polar bears in 2008. Hunters and the Safari Club International had challenged the ban but lost their court battle. Earlier this year, the same court rejected an attempt by polar bear trophy hunters in the state of Alaska to completely strip polar bears of their federal protection. It's great that these legal protections have been confirmed, and now it's time to move forward with actually protecting the bear, said Cassie Siegel, director of the Center's Climate Law Institute. In addition to rapid greenhouse pollution cuts, we need to stop the international trade in polar bear parts, curtail polar bear hunting, and protect the bear's Arctic habitat from oil and gas development. And the Bureau of Land Management wants to give off-road vehicles 50,000 more acres in the Algodones Dunes area of Southern California. The Bureau of Land Management is spoiling for another fight in Southern California. The Bureau has proposed opening up an additional 50,000 acres of land, including habitat for rare and vanishing species, to unlimited destructive off-road vehicle use. This proposal is the single largest conservation rollback in more than a decade in California's desert area. Algodones is the largest active sand dune formation in North America, covering about 200,000 acres in California's Imperial County. Among the imperiled species living there are Pearson's milk vetch and desert tortoises, both of which are protected under the Endangered Species Act, along with the Algodones Dunes sunflowers, flat-tailed horned lizards, and several dozen invertebrate species that occur nowhere else on this planet. This plan pushes the rare plants and animals of the Algodones Dunes closer to extinction, robbing them of a huge part of their safe haven, said the center's Eileen Anderson. And the feds put on notice offshore fracking in California will hurt ocean life. Oil companies are fracking in federal waters in the wildlife-rich Santa Barbara Channel, a media investigation has revealed recently, putting rare and protected marine animals like sea turtles and whales at risk. So the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies have filed a notice of intent to sue the feds over their approval of offshore fracking in California's waters. The notice, which follows another landmark lawsuit we won, temporarily halting fracking on California's public lands, asked the government to suspend any fracking operations off the Golden State's coast until it can conduct a comprehensive study of the practice's effects on the ecology and wildlife of the area, home of some of the world's densest summer concentrations of blue whales. Oil companies are fracking California's beautiful coastal waters with dangerous chemicals, and federal officials seem barely aware of the dangers, said Miyoko Sakashita, our oceans director. We need an immediate halt to offshore fracking before chemical pollution or an oil spill poisons the whales and other wildlife that depend on California's rich coastal waters. And a suit has been filed to save southwest songbirds from tree-eating beetles. Southwestern willow flycatchers are acrobatic birds that swoop among the trees over the southwest's last precious waterways to catch insects. But now insects are threatening flycatchers. Asian beetles, introduced to rid the wild of invasive tamarisk trees, are invading flycatcher nesting areas in southern Utah, Nevada, and parts of Arizona. While we at the center have no love for tamarisk, but in the absence of serious efforts to restore native habitat, this beetle could seriously threaten flycatchers' survival. To get clearance to release the exotic beetles into the United States, the Fed promised mitigation if their release plan went awry. Yet, they haven't taken the needed steps, including planting native willows and cottonwoods to replace the dying tamarisk trees to help the endangered willow flycatchers. Instead of providing promised help against a full-fledged beetle invasion, in 2010, the feds merely terminated the tamarisk beetle program, which meant they stopped importing them. They didn't stop the tamarisk beetles. They're still doing fine. So, Center for Biological Diversity has filed a new lawsuit against those feds over their failure to safeguard the flycatchers from the harmful effects of these exotic beetles. We won't let these birds go extinct because of the shenanigans of a foreign insect or a domestic agency. And an old-growth harvest has been halted in a reprieve for rare Alaskan wolves. The Center for Biological Diversity and their allies are celebrating recent news that the U.S. Forest Service has halted the sale of old-growth trees in Alaska's Tongass National Forest, while it takes another, more in-depth look at how such logging will affect the rare Alexander Archipelago wolves. The Big Thorn Project, approved in July, would log 6,000 acres of old-growth trees in the Tongass National Forest, construct 46 miles of new road, including 38 stream crossings, and reduce the habitat of the deer, the wolves' primary prey, to less than 30% historical levels on Prince Wales Island. The Center for Biological Diversity and other conservation groups appealed the plan, and the regional forester has ordered the agency to put the sale on hold to conduct additional review. The forester said she was concerned about comments from an expert on the Alexander Archipelago wolves, who said the logging project, quote, represents the final straw that will break the back, unquote, of the wolf-deer-predator relationship on Prince of Wales Island. The Center for Biological Diversity and Greenpeace have petitioned to protect Alexander Archipelago wolves, a rare subspecies of gray wolves, under the Endangered Species Act. And an Idaho judge has blocked big oil and has halted Highway 12 megaloads. In this story by Eric Barker of the Lewiston Tribune, Lewiston, Idaho. The Nez Perce Tribe and Idaho Rivers United have scored a victory when a federal judge ordered the U.S. Forest Service to temporarily halt megaload shipments through the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest via U.S. Highway 12. U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill rejected claims by the Forest Service that it had to first complete a study of megaload effects before it could stop shipping company Omega Morgan from hauling a giant General Electric evaporator through the forest on its way to oil fields in Alberta, Canada. He said the agency was bound by several federal acts and its own forest plan to study the effects of the megaloads and consult with the Nez Perce tribe before allowing them to pass through the forest and its middle fork of the Clearwater Lhoxa Wild and Scenic River Corridor. A consultation must be conducted after the corridor study and before any further Omega Morgan megaloads pass through, the judge wrote in his ruling. The agency has already begun to study the intrinsic and spiritual values of the corridor, not just for the tribe, but for other citizens as well. It hopes to finish that review in a short period of time, perhaps by the end of October, according to the Lhoxa District Ranger Craig Truluck. Brooklyn Baptiste, a member of the Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee, said the consultation that will follow the study will take some time. We look forward to them coming to the table and finding the best pathway forward consistent with our view that we don't want it to become an industrial corridor, he said. When the tribe does consult with federal agencies on any project or any rule, it always takes some time. You want to make sure that it's solid. It's something we would want ourselves, and it's not going to be an overnight process. Judge Windmill sympathized with arguments by Resources Conservation Company International, a GE subsidiary that designed the evaporators, that it faces losing as much as $5 million in delay penalties if it can't immediately use the route to deliver the evaporators as contracted. But he said that is something the company was well aware of before it positioned two megaloads at the Port of Wilma for shipment east along the narrow and twisting highway. He pointed out the company researched the route and was notified by the plaintiffs and the Forest Service about procedural problems with the route. RCCI knowingly put its loads into a position where the company would incur $5 million in losses if it must wait for the Forest Service review, Windmill wrote in his ruling. Given these circumstances, the court cannot find that the balance of equities tips in the defendant's favor. In fact, it tips in the other direction to clear command of the tribe's treaty rights, the National Forest Management Act and the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. Kevin Lewis of Idaho Rivers United said the ruling gives the agency time to complete a thorough review, and it should send a signal to others who want to transport megaloads along the highway. I think that is going to happen. Is that future megaload shippers are going to understand Highway 12 is fraught with peril, and the most important thing to them is certainty, and there is no certainty with Highway 12, Lewis said. Trulock said he fielded calls from other shippers following the ruling seeking a status of the route. Omega Morgan had planned to ship an additional 7 GE megaloads via Highway 12, and Contractors Cargo Company of Compton, California, was planning to use the route to move 3 refinery vessels from the port of Lewiston to Great Falls, Montana. Last month, hundreds of tribal members and environmentalists protested when Omega Morgan hauled an evaporator from the port of Wilma to Canada via the highway against the wishes of the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest. The tribe and Idaho Rivers United filed their lawsuit in the midst of those processes. And for further information, go to www.wildsalmon.org. And the Endangered Species Act success is a million king salmon come home. This year, Chinook salmon, also known as king salmon, are returning to the Columbia River in numbers not seen since the Bonneville Dam was built in 1938. More than a million fish have been counted so far. Although the large numbers of returning kings have a complex of factors behind them, including good ocean conditions, their abundance is also a testament to the success of the Endangered Species Act, which is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. The number of stocks of Chinook and other Columbia River salmon are protected under the Act and have been helped by better dam management, protection of their spawning streams from logging, livestock grazing, and other threats, and extensive stream restoration efforts. Columbia River Chinook aren't out of hot water yet and need more help, including the removal of dams on the lower Snake River, says the Center of Biological Diversity's Endangered Species Director Noah Greenwald. But without the Endangered Species Act, we wouldn't be seeing this astounding abundant run of king salmon. That's all the time we have for environmental news this week on the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is a production of Earth First Radio. If you'd like to hear a rebroadcast of this show, tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or you can tune in to Radio Free Moscow, KRFP, Idaho, at 92.5 FM on Monday nights at 9:30. And we want to thank them for rebroadcasting this show. You can also download a podcast at radioforall.net. And thank you for listening, and do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.